You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
New York is often called the city that never sleeps, and finding a sense of calm and tranquility can be a bit of a challenge. But William Powers went looking for just that, and he's written a memoir about his experience called New Slow City, Living Simply in the World's Fastest City. It's published by New World Library. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
It's wonderful to be here.
How do you define slow living? Is it linked to slow food?
It is. The slow movement includes slow food, slow money, slow travel, all these related trends. But one thing I always say is, you know, slow is not Luddite. It's not rejecting everything that's modern or fast. It's determining your own pace. It's leading a self-paced life.
Had you always lived in New York City?
I'm from third generation New York City. Grew up on Long Island, but my grandfather and father grew up here in the city.
And then you wrote a book. Your last book was about a decision to move to a cabin in North Carolina.
That's right. So
to get away from New York and the fast pace?
Well, it was actually a coincidence. I was in North Carolina and interviewing this physician who moved into a 12-foot by 12-foot off-grid cabin. And believe it or not, she invited me to stay there for a season. So I lived 12 by 12, no electricity or running water, and just experienced sort of the joy of simplicity and minimalism and eliminating a lot of stuff from your life and just finding a lot of happiness by having less.
After a while, doesn't it get kind of tiring and having to go to a well to get water and
right.
finding firewood and all of that stuff?
Right. Like, so when I arrived,
well, it sounds to me like it's not very simple.
Well, when I arrived at the 12 by 12, there was no manual to live in this tiny house. But you figure it out, and I think that, you know, we're just such creative species, Homo sapiens. So we just, you know, figure out how to get your own food and get water from a well and everything like that. You just do it.
And were you planning to come back to New York while you were living there?
Yes, I was.
You could have gone to another area that might have been a bit more relaxed. Was there a reason that you came here in particular?
Well, you know, I love New York. And part of this new book, New Slow City, is sort of my love story about New York and just how great it is. And, you know, I'm just happy to be able to find some of that 12 by 12 spirit in the world's fastest city.
So you and your wife moved into a 340 square foot apartment in Greenwich Village.
Right.
It's what's called a micro apartment.
That's right. So it was part of Bloomberg's micro apartment initiative at the time.
Usually designed for one person, not a married couple right. or even an unmarried couple.
Exactly. So it was a bit of a challenge at first, you know, having to do the yoga posture shoulder stand in the bathtub that's so tiny and sort of avoid bumping into each other in the kitchen.
Was it any bigger than your cabin in North Carolina?
It was basically two 12 by 12s put together with a slender kitchenette in between.
Now, people wouldn't normally choose to live in a micro apartment if they could have a standard living space. Was you doing this as an experiment, or did you have a book deal in mind?
No. You know, Thomas Merton called his tiny monk's cabin, you know, the four walls of his new freedom. And there is a sense to which when you can get some of the clutter out of your life, it just opens up a lot of creativity. For example, getting rid of like a lot of our extra clothing and paintings on the wall and everything, we just had much less to care for, maintain. And then we just started being in the city a lot more, in the parks and the museums, and just enjoying it a lot more.
Well, how much did you have in the cabin? It seems to me you would have had to have stripped down to live in that place.
Right. Well, I was, you know, occupying that cabin for a short period of time that this physician still lives in 10 years later. But, you know, I took over the stuff that she had in the cabin.
Now, Greenwich Village can be a rather expensive area. Was this the only apartment you might have been able to afford there? What was the rent?
The rent was pretty cheap for that area, obviously, and affordable for us. You know, anything bigger would have been totally out of our price range. So, yes, part of the decision was financial.
Is Greenwich Village the ideal neighborhood to live in if you want to live slowly? I can think of many quieter places in the city.
Right. I know you live in Greenpoint, right?
Yeah. Well, there are noisy parts of Greenpoint and Williamsburg as well, but I live in a very quiet part.
Right. Well, I think that the West Village is a wonderful neighborhood. I mean, I love all of New York, but the West Village is a wonderful place to live with the Hudson River flowing by, Pier 45, Washington Square Park. You know, there's just so many little nooks and crannies to find your urban sanctuaries, places where you can find peace.
Was your wife on board with this lifestyle change?
Well, part of our slow year living more slowly was working less. So I scaled back my work week rather dramatically, whereas she was working full-time at the UN. So we did have a clash in terms of, you know, our patterns of work.
And you have to choose to want to slow things down. There are some people like me who like to go out every night, go to theater or movies or parties or to dinner with friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, theater and dinner with friends sounds quite slow.
Is that slow? That's slow?
Absolutely. A lot of it depends upon your inner state, like how you feel.
Or how fast you eat.
Right. Slow food.
So you had to get rid of a lot of stuff to move in. How did you decide what to get rid of?
It's a process of paring down and thinking of your living space as a ship. Like, what would you equip on a ship if you just had that area to live on, or a houseboat? And we minimize to match our needs with our possessions. And also, like, the things that really gave us the most beauty or joy, we would also keep. And the rest was sort of sold at a stoop sale.
Was there an adjustment period?
Yes, there was. We would routinely call it our mosh pit, the apartment, because we were constantly slam dancing into each other trying to get around. And of course, when you have a guest over, you know, even getting them into the tiny bathroom and being able to close the door is quite difficult. So you have to adjust to this micro apartment. But I'll tell you one thing we discovered that a lot of New Yorkers don't know about is the roof. You know, we called it Tar Beach, our roof right above us that nobody else in our apartment building even used. So that just opened up some whole new square footage. You know, we would see like baby doves being born on the fire escape across from us on the roof.
Did you ever reach a point where you thought, maybe I can't do this?
Yes, I did. You know, because sometimes it is very countercultural to go slower and to work less and to be enjoying more. It's sort of the idea of the saunterer or the flaneur from Paris. You know, it's a different lifestyle that doesn't really in some ways fit in with New York. But then when I started to do it, I began to meet a lot of cultural creatives innovating in new aspects of slow. And then I found community among people who were body surfing the Rockaways or doing different things in their free time and not just working all the time.
And body surfing the Rockaways is part of the slow movement?
Well, that's part of my interpretation of slow. I don't think there's any one definition.
Yeah, give me some of the slow things that people can do.
Well, for one thing is you can find urban sanctuaries. You know, those quiet spaces in the city, whether it's the third story of the Met, the Chinese Decorative Arts, or the Ramble in Central Park, or wherever it is for you that you can find quietude in the city and find that. The other is living at the third story. Like, I'm just looking up above all the sample sales and the happy hour come-ons to, like, what's going on at third story. It's beautiful trees and birds and everything else just right above your head. That's a way to find peace on an everyday basis. You know, so there's a lot of little tools that I talk about in New Slow City that you can apply in your daily life to find more sense of peace and serenity. And actually, you become a lot more productive in the time you are working because you've centered yourself.
And the book is called New Slow City, Living Simply in the World's Fastest City. It's published by New World Library. And William Powers here is here to talk about doing this for how long?
For 1 year.
And then you, at the end of the book, you...
We're not going to spoil the ending, are we?
Okay.
I mean, you can, I suppose.
Well, you've lived elsewhere. You were here once to talk about a book about Liberia.
That's right. I was on your show several years ago. That was my book, Blue Clay People, about living in Charles Taylor's Liberia. I spent 3 years in West Africa as an aid worker.
Could you live a slow life there?
You know,
especially
absolutely.
With Charles Taylor constantly threatening to kill everybody?
Well, I mean, I was there during the Taylor regime, and ironically—
Oh, when he was already elected president.
Yeah, he was president. That was 2001 to 2003. And, you know, what I did find was there's this leisure ethic in West Africa, which is in opposition to our, you know, work ethic. And people oftentimes need to spend 4 or 5 hours doing nothing, relaxing in hammocks or on the beach. And just that did open up for me some of this idea of having more leisure time.
On the other hand, that is one of the reasons that Liberia is having so much trouble in dealing with the Ebola epidemic.
Right.
Because that kind of lifestyle sometimes works against the kinds of things you have to do to combat something that is an immediate emergency.
Well, that's true. I mean, Liberians do work hard and they do a lot. It's a very deep reason as to why there's this Ebola crisis.
Why do you think the United States has such a different culture than other countries, many of them more laid back?
You know, I think it's a sort of combination of Puritanism and, you know, the capitalist ethos coming together. And it's led to the fact that of the industrialized countries, we work the most hours of any other country. The average European works 9 weeks a year less than we do.
On the other hand, the French government now is trying to change that culture because it's hurt the French economy. And one of the problems I would imagine in living a slower life is that if you have a job, mm-hmm. You still got to show up every day, 9 o'clock. You got to stay at least until 5. Sometimes you have other commitments. Mm-hmm. So it's almost impossible to do that sort of thing. And maybe it's one of the reasons the United States is so powerful economically.
Well, I mean, I disagree because I think that some very powerful economic countries like Germany, Holland, other countries that are advanced industrial economies are doing it with much more maternity leave, with paid leave, you know, with mandatory policies to give people more time off, policies like job sharing. You know, all of these really do liberate us. And I guess you saw that Carlos Slim, the world's richest man, recently called for a 3-day work week. And he's been
well, he could take off every day right now.
But, you know, that idea is catching on. I was just at Google yesterday, speaking at Google in Cambridge, and they're very interested in these ideas. So there is this movement towards more free time.
Does it require taking a break from technology?
Well, I firmly believe in taking technology sabbaticals or technology fasts, as it's called sometimes. So Melissa and I would routinely, for a weekend or for even a Sunday or a couple days, turn off our gadgets and disconnect. It's incredibly liberating.
So you never checked your iPhone for email and
calls? Oh, well, definitely not on Sundays.
Calls.
Like, right, never on Sundays. And sometimes we would take sort of 3 or 4 day weekends and not check. Because, you know, the average American now, 70% of Americans check their smartphones under the table at dinner. And something like 75% check it when they first wake up while they're still in bed and also when they're before they go to bed. So it's bringing work into all parts of our day. We want to kind of avoid that.
Now, do you think that you're a happier person because you did that? And have you been able to sustain that in your post 350 square foot apartment?
Yes. I am just confident that anyone who practices the kind of things we do in this book, you know, will bring much more happiness and joy. We just found so much more calm, and just we fell deeper in love with the city, you know, just because we're actually spending time not just rushing around from one appointment to the next, but being with each other, you know, because having more free time and having less rent, living in a smaller, more minimalist space allows more time for romance and for the couple.
But having more time doesn't necessarily mean better time.
Well, it depends on your perspective. I mean, I take perspective that life is very short. We're only here for a very small blip. And you, just being aware, conscious of, like a musician who's aware of like sort of the music that's playing, like you're just always aware of what's going on around you, it deepens your life. It almost like extends the amount of time available to you.
Now, some of the arguments you have sound similar to the arguments that people who meditate might have. In the end, this is all about dealing with the stresses of modern life.
I think it's bringing a meditative sort of perspective into daily life and even into your work. What I found was, because I originally scaled back to a 2-day work week, but through the book I had to increase that. Again, that wasn't
really viable. You have to pay the rent, don't you?
Exactly.
Even if the rent is small.
Right. And even if my wife is working at the UN. But, you know, we have to do that.
What does she do at the UN?
She works in women's political participation. And so, you know, what was the question? I kind of lost my train of thought there.
Well, we're going to end it there, so yeah. We'll leave everything dangling as we're going to leave the ending dangling.
Yes.
William Powers is a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute and an adjunct faculty member at New York University. And his latest book is called New Slow City, Living Simply in the World's Fastest City. It is published by New World Library.
Yes.
And I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks, Leonard.